How did that sharing, that creating community go at lunchtime? Did you get into it? Did you get into, like, what's my next step in sharing with your table? Who did? You became friends. Oh, look at that. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Did you have similar? So here, where's my mic? Yeah. Thank you. Tell us what happened.
Mike, please share.
Okay, I was not expecting this. Well, we took a nice long walk in the park, and we're all sweaty. Yeah.
Good.
So I think I just went over there, and she...
We were first talking about our kids and how we're, she's a young grandma, and I'm about to be one.
Oh, wow.
And then we talk about what we did, but also next steps was sort of like a topic and how we are just interested in expanding from a spiritual perspective, because we know a lot of science and a lot of heady stuff, but how we have to get women to make the connection, because it's all integrated. And so she's a doctor of
metaphysical science,
but we both focus on hormones and transformation also. So we're just like thinking of doing a telesummit together and
Wow.
The sky's the limit. Yep.
Do you see the power of community?
Yeah.
Okay, so that means you guys have to stay in touch.
Yes, and I told her she can come to Kansas City and stay with me if she'd like.
She can come to D.C. anytime.
Beautiful. Let's all give them a big hug and a kiss. And
yeah.
Thank you. Well, awesome. Who else would like to share what you committed to for your next steps, or what you said, what you think your next steps are going to be? Anybody? Okay, where? I thought I saw a hand go up. So who else did it? Nobody?
Who wrote it out?
Who wrote it out? Yeah. You wrote it? Okay. Would you be willing to share it? Yeah. Because
Please
here's
share.
The thing. When you think something through and you don't write it, it's still in there. One of my clients used to say to me, the spoken word is like the air. The written word is always there. Isn't that nice? So, and when you write it, just activating the nerve pathways down into your hand reinforces it in your brain, and you're going to remember it. I take notes up the wazoo when I go to seminars. I almost never look at them, but I absorb it because I write. But if I just listen without activating the kinesthetics, I don't remember it. So that's why I wanted you to write it. And our segment after the raffle is going to be all about, like, really making a commitment and writing your next steps. So go for it.
Okay. You know, I actually took a look at not just one step, but a number of steps.
Good.
Of course, one of which is the LinkedIn, because I've always had an issue about really getting out there. And one of the obstacles was to be willing to just say, I'm playing full out, so I put LinkedIn first. To start with programs having to do with my own health, I can't talk the talk if I don't walk the walk. Mm-hmm. To put together a blog having to do with not only this experience, also the experience of this young lady who has massively moved me, and I've been helping them with other ways to raise money, but to truly believe that we are the elders, regardless of your age, we are the elders to move mountains, and the 90% that stops us from doing that is that little tiny block that's really only about 2 feet tall. And so I'm going to do the blog that has to do with being willing to really get out there and own our own wellness. Mm-hmm. And then I take the word healthy and change it to heal. And so part of my Facebook communication over the next couple of weeks is really and truly realizing that not only does this program exist and that I encourage people to really look into it, but to hold them accountable for the things that they're not willing to be honest about, and that's their own stuff.
So awesome. Thank you. And what is your, like, role? What is your job? Your what's your practice?
What?
Yeah.
I actually have a healing center, and it centers around not only the emotion code, which I do a lot of public speaking about, and seminars about. But I have clients that come to me. I'm also a life coach, but I have clients that come to me, and I really go to the core. And so yeah. The name of my company is Core Foundations.
Nice.
So nothing can shift unless you're willing to really do some of the milky stuff in the middle. And so I am a body worker. I am an intuitive healer. But more importantly, when people come in, I can pretty much tell you exactly what's going on.
Beautiful. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Give her a big kiss. Mwah. Okay, so I need that up here. Oh, yeah, when you're done. Anybody else? I can take one more share if anybody's like burning to share. Anybody? So I'm going to ask you guys a favor, and this is going to help you as much as it's going to help me, is if you're willing, if you've written something down or are willing to write it on our next break, please turn it in to me, because what I want to do is use that and just make sure that I'm covering some of those things in our next segment, our ending segment, or giving you a resource that will help move you forward towards that. Right? And I may be able to connect you with somebody else in the community who has a similar kind of thing and you just happen to not sit at the same table with, so you didn't meet, or somebody in the outside community. But I want you guys to get what you need next, right? And I know some of you are moving forward with us in the, well, the ones over there are moving forward. You're already in NEPT. Why aren't you over there?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, you're in core, right? Okay, good. But you could have gone over there and been with us during lunch. So I want to use that to help us to formulate now not only the content for this next thing. We have a VIP webinar coming up after this, right? And so I want to make sure I've given, you know, because that's an implementation strategies webinar. So I want to make sure that you guys have what you need to move forward, whether it's with us or not. I would hope that it's with us. I really love to create the community and invite you to the community. So if you are still just sitting there with a, should I or shouldn't I, should I or shouldn't I, then go talk to one of us in the back. Go talk to Angelica. Go talk to Lynn. Talk to Annette or Kimberly's in the other room leading a training, but you could talk to her later if there's somebody you connected with here, or come talk to me. I mean, I can't talk to you exactly in between things, but if you're staying afterwards, come talk to me at the end, you know? And I'm here. I'm here tomorrow because we're leading another training tomorrow for our NEPTers. I would love to chat with you and just see if I can help you to take the next step. But a lot of times we hold back because we're not quite there. And those of you who need the practice accelerator type piece, like, I want to know what to do, how do I do this, how do I get out there, come talk to me if you're thinking about that, because it's a big investment, and that investment has the ability to be earned back within one launch, right, if it's done right and we position it right with exposure to 150,000 people. And it could be the best thing you ever did. If you don't do it, I want you to sit with, where are you going to be in a year? Are you going to be closer to your goal? Are you going to be still sitting here with, I don't know what to do next? Because the cost of inaction is sometimes a lot more than the cost of taking action. And I think about a few times when I didn't take action, and that cost me more than had I taken the action and invested the money. In terms of lost revenue, in terms of lost exposure, in terms of people that I didn't get to help that I could have. So, thank you. Anybody want to learn about assessments? Yes? Okay. So we're going to learn about assessments. And there's just this much time and way beyond the walls of this room in terms of what I can teach you about assessment. The assessment unit on our program is 19 modules, and I don't even know how many hours of education that is, but know that every module is at least an hour, and it's going to teach you everything you need to know and more, and because we're always updating about the current functional assessments, but also how you can use the conventional blood testing to get functional information about your clients. That was lunch. So what I look at is there's four pillars of functional assessment. We have to be a detective, right? That's what Lisa said when she was on the screen over there. I'm a detective. We have to have really good detective history-taking skills and interview skills. And we have to be really good at asking the question why and continuing to ask the question why and go deeper and deeper and deeper until you get to root cause. We have to know physical evaluation. Now, not all of us have the license to touch people, but you can still do a physical evaluation without touching people. Anybody curious? You can create. We have this beautiful form that you can fill out, and you can ask the person to work with a family member to check certain things, or you can do it on Zoom calls and say, okay, turn around. Let me see behind your ear. Let me see your toes, you know, and you can actually do that sort of stuff within the scope of your license. It's very cool. You need to be able to know what functional lab tests are appropriate for what person at what given point in time, right? Not every functional lab test needs to be done for every person. And if you take a new person in and you do a history and you go, I need a stool test and I need a Dutch test and I need an oat test and I need a nutrition and I need a blood test, number one, you're going to be overwhelmed when the results come back. Number two, you're going to be confused when the results come back because there's going to be a lot of conflicting things, and then you're going to have to go, which do I address? You can't address it all. They'll be on 37 supplements and eating certain, you know, ways that are contradictory to each other. So we need to know what tests to order and in what order to get the information we need. There are a lot of what I call allopathic naturopaths or allopathic functional medicine people that go into from allopathic medicine with the this for that mentality, that you go to see them and they do $500, $1,000, $2,000 worth of tests when you first walk in the door. They get the results back and they say, here's what you need to know. And it's a list of supplements to take that's this long. And I know somebody recently who did that. And she was like, I'm blown away. Like, it's $800 a month worth of supplements. First of all, my budget can't tolerate that. Do I need it? Which of this can I do with food? And won't my body get really confused by throwing all this stuff in at the same time and not know what to handle? So we have to learn to prioritize. And some of the stuff that you can learn to do is tests you can do in your office if you have one, but tests you can have people do at home. About, I think it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we did a Spring into Vitality, which was our client-centered event like this. We were doing that once every spring. And then we did a Shine on the same topic, which was assessments, right? We called it Access Your Inner Healer, right? Learn what's going on and make changes. And part of that, we actually had stations at the event set up with all kinds of home testing things that you can do. I've shown you a few. I've shown you actually you can consider the Muse headband as an assessment device, right? Because it's telling you how your brain waves are going, right? You can consider these rings an assessment device because it's telling you how much REM sleep you're getting or how much deep sleep you're getting. But there's also some other stuff. There's all kinds of urine sticks that you can get. There's pH testing, there's mineral testing. There's all sorts of tests that you can teach people to do at home. We don't have time to go into all of this, like I said. So I've picked one of these areas to focus on, and that is the lab. I'm going to go deep on the lab. I'm going to share with you a couple of little things about the history-taking skills, and then a little bit on the physical, but I really want to go deep with one thing, and that would be the lab. Is that okay if I do that?
Yes.
So everybody, that seems to be what everybody's mostly interested in anyway. But we have to start with a thorough and comprehensive history, in addition to their demographics and what their occupation is and what their past occupations are. Did they used to work in a coal mine? You know, what are their industrial exposures? But all the other things that you need to know, which is their family history. The family history suggests genetics, right? So you can go, wow, every generation there was somebody with Alzheimer's. Is it because they have an APOE4/4, right? Is it a genetic thing? Or do they all have the same bad habits that they eat 300 pounds of sugar a year instead of the 150 that the average person eats, and they're just, you know, junk food junkies, and they've blown out their brain. So we have to have all this stuff, the current health history, the current symptoms. I have them rank the symptoms. I have them rank the current the symptoms in terms of 0 to 10, how severe is it and how important is it. And I also have them look at from a perspective of how that symptom's impacting them, and have they ever been diagnosed with any particular condition. Now, just because somebody else put them in a box and put a label on the box, that doesn't mean that I'm going to say, oh, the nutritional treatment for Hashimoto's is X, or the nutritional treatment for Crohn's disease is Y. I want to know what they've been diagnosed with. I want to know what treatments they've had. I want to know what treatments worked, but I also want to know what treatments didn't work. Does anybody understand why I want to know what treatments didn't work? Right? Because if you understand the physiology and the biochemistry and you're going, wait, this person has depression and they were on SSRIs and it didn't do anything. Like, it's probably not a serotonin-related problem, right? So we want to go through, like, if this did and that, they did this and it didn't work, we want to know. That gives us as much information as if we, as what worked, right? So all of these things are super, super, super important. A nutrition evaluation. What are they eating? What nutrients are they eating? What drugs are they on that might be interfering with their nutrition, right? A lot of drugs interfere with nutrition. Are they taking medications that are cross purposes? And a lot of times if they're seeing a general practitioner and several specialists, who's seen that where they're on multiple medications and they're cross-reacting or one's causing the symptoms, right? That the other one is solving. And then I had this one time, I had a woman come in, she was 37 years old, and she was on 5 medications, right? Antidepressants, thyroid medication, I can't even remember all the rest of them, birth control pills, and maybe some kind of gut stuff, and probably a PPI, whatever. So she was on like 5 though, 37 years old. So I started working with her, started changing her diet. And she was like, oh, am I ever going to get off thyroid medication? I said, that's the last, right? That's replacing a hormone, and we're going to figure out why. But let's work on the other. We worked on her gut. We worked on her blood sugar. Within, like, less than 3 months, she was off everything except the thyroid. And then we started really working at the thyroid. So you've got to understand what medications they're on and how they're working. Oh, the last one on there, ready and willing. Who does a ready and willing evaluation of their patients? Yeah, right? So you've got to be able to know where they're at, where their motivation lies. How important is this to them? What are they willing to do? So I actually have a written one that I give some people, and some people I just ask. How willing are you to make diet and lifestyle changes? How willing are you to take supplements if they're needed for you, et cetera? Really important. So let's go into, this is the part of my nutritionally oriented physical, and this is just the part for the adrenals, but I have like a 6-page document that you can go through and help them to find things on their body. And this is all in your slides on the chart. So, but this is invaluable. This I put together based on my pyramid, right? Because if they have digestive symptoms and you're working on their thyroid and you don't work on their digestion, or if they don't have digestive symptoms but they have leaky gut or they have dysbiosis and you're trying to work on their thyroid, it's not going to get fixed until you fix their gut. So this is my pyramid, my order: digestion, then blood sugar, then adrenals, then thyroid, then the sex hormones, and then the other organs. Now, seriously, if they're in a critical situation, life-threatening, you're going to work symptomatically on certain areas, right? You have to. But you can't work on a symptom. Like Dr. Tom said it beautifully, right? You fell in, and throw them the life preserver, and then you hang out there. You got to figure out why'd you fall in. Right? The life preserver is going to keep you alive, but why'd you fall in? So I put this together. We're not going to go through every piece on this. This is like a 3-hour lecture. But at each level, what are some of the diagnostics that you can use, the assessments that you can use to assess the gut, to assess the blood sugar, to assess each of these levels? Do you think this would be helpful to have? Yes? Yes. So if you want more detail on it, we have videos available from our previous Shines. We have a 3-day conference where we did spend an hour really going through all the little different levels, and just talk to Scott in the back and he'll get you hooked up. But this is really important to understand, lab values versus the optimal values, right? Because if you know how those labs are coming up with those values, it's like, okay, here's the averages of all the people in here, and let's do a bell curve, and anybody that's in the 5% on either side, they're abnormal. Look around, you guys. Are 90% of the people on this planet healthy? Do you want to be in that range, or do you want to be in the optimally healthy range? Right? Do you want to be the one that's responsible for getting your person out of the 5% on the edges and into the 90, or do you want to get them into the optimal? Optimal, right? So we need to understand how to do that. Again, this is something I can't go through in detail today, but I'll tell you, we put together this together, and I can tell you how you can get access to this chart, because it's amazing. It's an Excel spreadsheet that spent hours and hours and years actually putting all compiling the data, and we change it periodically when new ranges are come up with. But we have two columns, the lab range, which was based on, say, something like LabCorp or Quest labs. And it's going to be different in different areas, because if you're in a geriatrics versus a college town, it's going to be different. But the general lab ranges. And then we put in the optimal ranges. And there's discrepancy from one practitioner to another, one research study. So I try to, you know, like within that range. But here's the deal. You see how some of those cells are green and some of them are yellow? We don't have any reds there. But when you put the number in, and it's within the optimal range, the cell is green. When you put the number in and it's outside the optimal but still within the lab range, it turns yellow. And when it's outside the lab range, it turns orange. And it's a great, easy visual that you just put the numbers in, and when you're talking to somebody, they're seeing, and they're going, oh, why are all those things yellow? Why are all those things red? Where if you just say, oh, your BUN is outside the optimal range, and they're going, what is that? And we also have a little description of what is that, what does it mean, possibly, if it's low or high, and what some of the follow-ups might be.
So how do we get that chart?
I'll tell you at the end of this. NEPT for sure. Thyroids. This is, I'm picking this one out because there's so much problem with the way that conventional medicine does thyroid. One of our students, Jenny, she had this issue with her thyroid, and they ended up taking her thyroid out. She didn't know anything, right? And then she started researching, because she's a computer person. She wanted to know why. She starts researching. They didn't do any of these tests. They just did TSH, found it abnormal, did an ultrasound, said, huh, you got some cysts on, we got to take your thyroid out. That was all they did when she found this out. She was livid. And she didn't want other people to have to go through that. She had complications of the surgery. She's still struggling with getting her medication levels right. Awful. We need to be testing a full thyroid panel, whether they're coming in for Hashimoto's, or, well, they wouldn't know that, whether they're coming in because they are on thyroid medication, whether they're coming in for a gut issue, whether they're coming in for headaches. You gotta test their thyroid, and you gotta test their antibodies, because nobody else is doing it. Conventional medicine does not test antibody levels. Isn't it? Right? Who else is in the medical? Is that something you learned in medical school to test for? Right? You don't. It's not done. TSH, if the TSH is out of range, they don't even do T3 or reverse T3. They do TSH. If TSH is abnormal, the lab will automatically run a T4. Some labs will run a free T4, some a total T4. If you don't see the whole picture, how do you know how that thyroid's functioning and why it's not functioning? If you have the TSH, that's a pituitary hormone, so the pituitary is not stimulating the thyroid. Is it a problem with the thyroid not responding, or is it a problem with the pituitary? And more people have problems with the pituitary because of so much stress and the cortisol and the ACTH, and that's all produced to stimulate the other parts in stress, and so many people are in stress. So you must do the antibodies. I also think you need to do free T3, free T4, total T4, and total T3 maybe. Okay? So it's really important because we want to know what's the thyroid making, total T4. We want to know, is there a problem with the binding globulin, if there's too much or too little of the protein that binds to the thyroid hormone and carries it to the cells? And is there a problem with the conversion from T4 to T3? And it's not enough to just know that T4 is in the range of, free T4 is in the range of 1.1 to 3, and free T3 is in the range of, you know, 3 to 4.5. and they're both in the range. What if T4 is 3, which is still in range, and T3, free T3, is 3.1, which is in the low end of the range? Do you think that's good? Do you think that's normal? Just because the both of them say normal and the both of them say ideal, even on my sheet? No, because they should be proportional. They should be proportional, right? So there's not enough conversion from T4 to T3. A lot of things can cause that, guys. Stress can cause that. Too much cortisol, not enough cortisol. Inflammation can cause that. Disease or infection somewhere else in the body can cause the body to go more to reverse T3, put the brakes on instead of free T3. So we need to know how to do a complete panel. I will admit I don't do reverse T3 all that much. Usually it's because it's expensive. I'll do the others and we'll address that. And if we're not able to figure it out, we'll do the reverse T3. Most of the time I can predict what the reverse T3 is based on what's T4 and what's T3. Are you guys following? Is any of this new? Is it good distinctions? Yes, you're out of your head. Anybody else that this is like, totally, I get this, move on. Get it, move on. So you guys are already doing this. All right, I just gave you this, you can use this. This is just my guidelines for vitamin D. I think the optimal range is somewhere between 60 and 100. Some of the studies show that the closer to 100, the less chance of cancer. And this is how I think things through based on my years of working with people as to when you and what you supplement and how you supplement and how you tell. You've got to recheck vitamin D. Reevaluation, reassessment of vitamin D is super critical. You don't know how many people I see that come in and say, oh, I'm taking 10,000 IUs of vitamin D. Great. Well, did you test it? Did you retest? Oh, I had it tested 2 years ago. No. Vitamin D needs to be retested like at least every 3 months for the first year until you get it right, until you've gone through all the seasons and you figure out what the level is and what the dosing is that they need in January versus July. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense to just say, oh, your vitamin D's low, honey. Here's 2,000 IUs. See ya. And they don't want to test it again because they already did it. That's putting a disservice to people because vitamin D is important for just about everything in the body. Immune system, gut-brain barrier, leaky gut, etc. So it's really important you have that as a reference. The vitamin D testing, here's how I like to do it. You get a baseline test. Then you have them supplement. You can use that other chart to determine how much to have them supplement. But do it, if you can get them to redo it in 6 weeks, then you can be a little more aggressive at bringing it up. If I'm going to get them to retest at 6 weeks, I'll say, if it's really low, I'll say, go to 20,000. Do it for 6 weeks, let's retest. Everybody's a little different on how they respond. I had two people around the same time a few years back. One was a female, one was a male. Both had single-digit vitamin Ds. So I told them both to take 20,000 IUs of vitamin D and take it for 6 weeks and then retest. First one goes out and does that, and she went from single-digit to 103 in 6 weeks on 20,000. So we had her gradually, wean it down. Let's go to 10,000 and see if it stays. Or actually, I had her go a little further down than that. But you don't take them off at that point because you know where they were on none. You don't want them there. So you want to figure out where is it going to go. So I actually would normally take them down to about 10,000 and retest in 6 weeks again. And if it's the same, that's great that we found a dose. If they're lower by a lot, then we know that somewhere between that 10 and 20 was where they need to maintain. If she's still high, we back it down a little bit further, right? If he came back at 200, I would have her go off of everything for like 2 or 3 weeks to get it back down because that's too high. So that's how I do it. And people get good results and we get them to go up, but you can't let them stop just because they get there. Oh, yeah, thank you. So the guy, I didn't hear back from him. And this was in the day when I did one-on-one and single visits. So I didn't sell packages. Now I do packages, and they have to use their visits within a certain time because I want to, I want to know. I want them to take their care. And about a year and a half later, he calls me up because I did another set of labs. I'd like to make an appointment. Okay, so I get in, and I'm going through his chart. And, of course, when you're seeing a lot of people, you don't remember that Joe Smith had, vitamin D was low the last time you saw him until you go through the chart. And I'm like, oh, vitamin D. And I looked at his labs. I said, you didn't test vitamin D. Why didn't you test vitamin D? He said, oh, I forgot about it. And I said, oh, I said, but last time I saw you, I told you to test at 6 weeks. What was it at 6 weeks? He said, I didn't do it. I said, oh. I said, so how much vitamin D are you taking? He says, 20,000, like you told me. For a year and a half, I like freaked out. Go get tested right away. So he goes to get tested. Guess what it was at? 60. You got the number exactly. Who said that? Yes, 60. She read my mind. She's a mind reader. It was 60. A year and a half of 20,000. So the more I learned about genetics, every day. He was one of those, he was a scientist, a computer guy. He was very rigorous. Every day. What's the difference? One went up to 105 in 6 weeks. One went up to 60 in a year and a half. Right? That's where some of the genetic factors come in. That's where you look for what's interfering with it. Is he getting enough vitamin K, right? Is he eating things that might be affecting his fat absorption, right? Fat-soluble vitamins, maybe. So it just, anytime you see a result, you've got to start questioning why? Well, it turned out he had a VDR, a homozygous VDR SNP, which is for vitamin D receptors. And he had a couple of others. So he had a lot of issues with his genetics. So he was somebody who needed to take a lot more vitamin D, and she didn't have any of that stuff. She had just gotten low because she was spending a lot of time indoors and, you know, wasn't eating anything with vitamin D in it. So this is, I put this in because we talked about ketones a lot this weekend. And ketones can be measured in the blood or the urine, right? You do the little test here. You can pee on the sticks. You can also test it in the urine, like for a quantitative, and usually it's a 24 or 6 hour collection. And this is the OAT test, organic acid test. Who's ever run an organic acid test? Okay, some of you. Organic acids are, there's these chemicals in the body that are intermediates in chemical reactions. So if I want to know how somebody's vitamin B6 level is, for example, just testing vitamin B6 in the blood is not going to tell me much of anything. But testing metabolites that might be high because vitamin 6 is missing. Where's my chart? This is where I would have needed. Okay, never mind. B6 may be a cofactor for converting. I know it's lots of things. So B6 is a cofactor for converting, say, tryptophan to serotonin, right? And if we see that the vitamin B6, we could see if the serotonin and then to melatonin. So we see that there's a pathway where it goes from here to here, and the level of that metabolite is high. It means the one before it. So say tryptophan super high and serotonin super low. You're going, huh? Why would that happen? The body should be able to convert tryptophan to serotonin. And if the B6 is missing, it can't. So this tests all different stuff. So it tests Krebs cycle metabolites, neurotransmitter metabolites, antioxidants, so many things. So in here there's several ketone markers. So you can see beta-hydroxybutyrate and acetyl acetate. So you can tell if somebody's having an issue if they're in ketosis. Now, here's the thing, though. If their ketones are high, is that a problem? Yes or no? You say no. Who says yes? You say yes. I'm missing the right answer. Thank you, my favorite answer to everything. It depends, right? It depends on what's going on. If this person is eating the standard American diet and they have high ketones, you got to investigate why, because that's insane. It shouldn't be that way. If this person's on a ketogenic diet, doesn't eat any grains or carbs, then you would expect to see them high, right? And it's this one is Great Plains. Yeah, I use Great Plains. Genova has one, and Genova also has it as part of their NutriVal, which has a whole lot of other stuff, including fatty acids and amino acids. So, what's that? No, I don't need it now. Thank you, though. Dutch test. Who has never heard of a Dutch test? Who thinks Dutch is like what they call people in the windmill country that ride bicycles, right? That's Dutch. Oh, a Dutch test. Right? If you just go Google Dutch, that's what you're going to see. You're going to see windmills and you see bicycles, and that's not what you want to look for. A Dutch test is different. So it stands for dried urine test for comprehensive hormones. It's a weird statement, but they wanted a cool acronym, right? Everybody knows what the Dutch test is once you've heard of it and you'll remember it. So the Dutch test actually tests for hormones and metabolites of the hormones, not just, oh, you have this much estradiol, and or estradiol, as Dr. Ali says. I love how the British pronunciations of some of these words. You want to know the ratios. You want to know the E1, E2, E3, which is estrone, estradiol, and estriol. You want to know the ratios of them, because as she was talking about yesterday, some are proliferative and some are protective. Some of them stimulate the alpha receptors, some the beta receptors. But you also want to know more than that. You want to know when those estrogens are broken down by the liver for elimination, what are the metabolites that build up? And there's three main ones, and she mentioned them, so I'll go into more detail on them. There's the four, the two, the four, and the 16. It's hydroxyestrone, 2-hydroxyestrone, 4-hydroxyestrone, and 16. So that's important. But also with the saliva of the cortisol, we're seeing a graph of, oh, the saliva cortisol is high here, low here. But this is giving metabolites and is giving active free cortisol, and then the metabolized, which is the inactive form. So it gives you a lot of information. It does take a little while to learn how to do it. The Great Plains, which does it, has a lot of education on their site, but you just have to watch a lot of these. We have case studies up the wazoo on this because everybody's always bringing their Dutch cases. So I've seen it all. And here's the thing. You have this expectation of what it should be, right? So we should see, we ideally want to see, you know, good testosterone levels, but then downstream from testosterone, who's heard of DHT? DHT, dihydroxytestosterone. So that is a more dangerous, strong metabolite that can cause cancer, causes male pattern baldness. So a lot of times people will say, oh, you're bald. That means you're virile. You got lots of testosterone. But you get the wrong kind of testosterone. You got more DHT, and that's what causes hair loss. And if you have a woman who's starting to lose her hair, there's a lot of things that can cause that, right? It could be thyroid dysfunction, it could be liver dysfunction, it could be adrenals. But it could be that she has too much DHT. So it's important to look at this, right? And I'll show you some of the pathways that they do here. So this is what the first page, they give you these dials, and the dials will tell you where you are with the major hormones. In this case, it just shows the estrogen, testosterone, and progesterone. But it shows you where they should be, which is within the little yellow stars if you're premenopausal, and then between the yellow star and the purple at the bottom if you're postmenopausal. And so you're helping to see what's the balance here, but I like seeing these charts because if they have within range estrogen, and within range progesterone, but estrogen's up here and progesterone's here, what's that called? Anybody? Estrogen dominance, right? And even though the estrogen isn't out of range, it's not opposed by the progesterone. And one of my pet peeves is a lot of people who do bioidentical hormones will give unopposed estrogen. You can't give estrogen without giving progesterone. In some cases, it might be rare, but I'm just going to say that as a generalization. But also, they'll give estradiol instead of giving a balance and more estriol. Estriol is the protection. Estriol is protective. The estradiol and estrone are proliferative. So we have to be careful there. So we first look here. Yeah?
Can you just do progesterone?
On this test? No.
Oh, when you're
can you just take progesterone is the question. A lot of people can safely take progesterone, yes, absolutely. And you saw Dr. Anna was showing the graphs that a lot of times that drop that we're seeing is the progesterone is dropping. So you can start with that. Progesterone can be prescribed over the counter. You can get creams. Bisweken has some. I think you have to be a practitioner that's licensed to get it from there. But Biomatrix has some. And they say on the bottles that it's for topical use. But the ingredients are exactly the same as they were 3 years ago when it said for oral sublingual use. But they got taken off the market for a while. I think FDA got involved, and they had to say that it was topical use. Now, people ask me, is it safe to take internally? I said, well, let me try. And they sent me samples. I started playing with it. I'm like, I didn't die. I can't say. I didn't develop a rash. I didn't. My throat didn't close. I didn't feel sick. Because the skin gets resistant to it. The skin gets resistant, except the mucous membranes. So my opinion, my experience, has been the best way to take topical is mucous membranes. So the vulva, they could take be taken intravaginally or the anus. And when you tell somebody, just like when you tell them you're going to do a coffee enema on the first visit or have them stick their tongue in cold water, when you tell them you have hormones that you want them to apply to their anal mucosa, they are oftentimes not really enamored, let's just say, and want to continue care with you. But once you develop a relationship with them, and once they've started taking them topically and you're not really seeing the results, you can tell them, okay, let's switch. It's been found that. You do have to be careful if they're sexually active because they can pass it to their partner. And if you have a man come in and very high progesterone, what question would you ask? What? Is your partner taking, you have to use the word partner these days, right? It's politically correct. Partner, is your partner using progesterone? If a woman comes in and she's got high testosterone, is your partner using testosterone? And if you're using topically. Now, you do have to be careful with people applying it topically that have babies. So if they're applying it to their forearms and then they're snuggling their babies, the baby can absorb that, right? So there's reasons. So when you do it in the hidden parts, except for in sexual activity, it's safer for our kids and grandkids and whatever else. All right, so that's page one. We'll never get through this if I keep going. I love this test, you could tell, and I usually spend half an hour to an hour on each of these on a call. There's the cortisol, and it looks similar if you've done any salivary. Looks similar on the left, that's the free cortisol. And then on the right, we're going a little longer on this because we had a shift, and you can talk to Carol, about that. Yeah.
Is there a number in the white middle, or are the octaval in the white middle?
Oh, in the circle is their number. Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. Is there the number in the middle is their number? So we're looking at this, and we're going, well, that looks like not such a good cortisol pattern. So you read them the same way you would, and I don't have time to go through all the, stage one and two and three and all that. But you're reading that, but you're also seeing what is the metabolized cortisol on the left-hand side, the right-hand side, whatever, right there, metabolized and free, and then there's some DHEA there. So you're comparing, and if they have a very high metabolized cortisol and a very low cortisol, it means that they're eliminating too much of it. It could be a thyroid problem. There's a number of things. And the stuff in here gives you some good stuff. I don't have time to go through every piece of it. And then they give you the list. I hardly ever look at that unless there might be some reason I want to look at it. And then there's this with the cortisol, and it shows you free cortisone versus cortisol. Cortisone versus cortisol. Cortisone is more of a storage form. So you're looking at ratios between them. But the real fun part I want to get to is, where'd it go? Holy shoot. Am I missing that page? Oh! My page got eliminated. There's the sex hormones. I wanted the picture of the sex hormones. I missed the picture of the sex hormones. It must have gotten accidentally deleted. So what we're seeing there, and we'll make sure it gets put back in there, and you can just listen back, and you can look on their site. What we see there is we see across the top, I have it memorized, so I can share with you. See across the top, we see the estrogen and progesterone, E1, E2, E3. And you want to always make sure that the ratio of E3 is higher than the sum of E1 and E2. That's called the estrogen quotient. If it's not, then there might be an iodine problem because there's some iodine in the conversion. It could be that they're taking hormones, and it could be just that they've got, things that they're taking that are causing that to be a problem. What else do I want to say? I'm trying to picture it. Okay, so then you get to see the testosterone over on the left, and you see the testosterone. And if you see a high testosterone in a woman, but it's not, and low estrogens, She's not aromatasing. It's not usual, but it happens. So she doesn't have enough of an enzyme called aromatase. What you're more likely to see is aromatase excess. So you're going to see a guy a lot of times who says, oh, I have low libido, I have this, I have that, I want to take testosterone. You know, like, let's test first. And if you test his testosterone, and his testosterone looks fine or high or low, whatever it is, but his estrogen is high, he's converting his testosterone, right? A lot of times I'll see somebody with low testosterone but high estrogen. And I had this one guy recently, and I said, you know, I'm not comfortable with you getting testosterone supplementation or doing anything that's going to stimulate testosterone until you fix this pathway and inhibit that enzyme. And that enzyme can get inhibited, can get excess with insulin resistance. So let's address your insulin resistance, and let's address your some other nutrients and herbs. And there's things like, you know, saw palmetto and omega-6 GLA can be low. I mean, there's a number of things that can be low. And so I'll sometimes give them some nettles and maybe some GLA. And there's a bunch of others, some ginseng. There's all kinds of herbs. And the pathway, I'll show you that in a minute, shows you some of that stuff. So he went, and we went back and did it 3 months later. He went on all kinds of aromatase inhibiting herbs, was working on his insulin resistance, and his testosterone was creeping up, and his estrogen was creeping down. Keyword, creeping. What do you think guys feel about creeping versus major changes, right? He's like, ugh. He's like, let's do it for 3 more months. Just keep doing it. He's getting a little bit better. Finally goes to see an MD. I was working with him remotely. He goes to see an MD. He goes, oh, you need testosterone. Puts him on testosterone. So he does that for 3 months and comes back in. His testosterone's nice and high, and his estrogen is through the roof. Like, guys don't get breast cancer a lot, but they do. You're at high risk here. And the reason I said that, because his estriol was low, his estrone and estradiol were high, but also we looked at the metabolites. Remember I said the 4 is carcinogenic, the 2 is protective, and the 16 is kind of both ways, but it's important for bones, so we don't want it all the way low. His 4 was high. I said, you're at risk for breast cancer. I hate to say this, right? But you're at risk for breast cancer. This is not good. And then we looked to see, before he had testosterone was low, DHT was low. But what happened from there is his DHT was up high. So increased hair loss and increased risk of prostate cancer. So he was at risk because his doctor was not testing properly in order to see if he was a good candidate for a testosterone replacement. So this is something why I love this test, highly recommend. In our program, we have a ton of case studies and descriptions of this program. Dutch test, yep. And the last thing in here is this chart. Memorize it, we'll have a test at the end of the day, okay? It's all the pathways for conversion from pregnenolone down to progesterone down to estrogen and all the pathways that convert. But the beauty of this chart is it shows metabolites, nutrients that help it to move, but it also shows the some of the genes and where the genes come in. So if you know that they have a gene SNP. I know this is a lot, and this is not meant to be a comprehensive talk on the Dutch test, but just to introduce you to it and let you know that it's a good test, and I highly recommend it. Like I said, there's a whole lot more, and I told you that I would let you know how to get that chart. Some of you are here. You didn't sign up for the whole ERC program, the Practice Accelerator or that, but maybe you're just interested in learning about assessments and want to get started with us. So we have a unit within there, 19 modules, hours and hours, dozens and dozens of hours. You could see what's in there. It's all the different functional tests. It's blood testing plus the advanced blood testing plus, you know, lots and lots of other functional tests like Dutch and OAT and everything. And there's a module about each one, and there's lots of cases presented in each one. So you get to see, like, how I analyze things. So if you're interested in doing that, go to the back of the room and talk to Scott. He has some order forms, and he'll explain to you there's a full pay option and there's a payment plan. If you sign up here today, We, at least for certain number, we can't do everybody, but we have a number of jump drives. So you'll get a bonus. I don't know how many we have left, but we have a number of jump drives that have not only this module on it that you can take home with you, not this module, the first one, the assessments piece. And you have all the assessments, the done-for-you assessments. It has done-for-you assessments in there that you can just take and use with your clients. And it's got that on the jump drive, but we also, as a bonus, are giving you our first two modules, which is the Intro to Nutritional Endocrinology and the Krebs Cycle, basically energy metabolism. And so if you're interested in that and you want to do it here at the event, the price is going to go up after the event. And I think it's, is it 6,000? It's going to be, it's 10,000 after the event, but it'll be 6,000. And you're going to get 9 months of calls with me where you can bring your cases to it. So if that's something of interest, I recommend you head to the back. Scott has order forms. I don't see anybody else back there. Maybe Linda has them too. And oh, over here. Yeah, you can go back to this table and grab an order form and get signed up. And then at least you're getting, you know, you're getting started. Some of you said, oh, I don't want to do the whole program yet. I'm not ready. But this is a great way to get started, especially if you already have a lot of the basic science part.